Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, the creator of the Brown Briefly. Together, we, the Brieflies, keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of quasi-intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra, and a mantra to remember, less is more, more or less. Let me introduce the Brieflies and our guests. Engineering the show from behind the board. The board that's been having a few problems this morning. Behind the board at the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon is our intrepid retired Alaska Airline captain and my airplane partner, Truman O'Brien. Are you settled down, Truman, from all the stuff?
Finally, yes. It took a while to get things going this morning.
We should call the head of the tech department. Oh, wait a minute, that's you.
That is me. Wait a minute. Yeah, you're right. I called myself this morning. I said, help. Yeah.
And it looks like you did it.
It's working.
You landed
it's
it.
It's working. Yeah.
That's good. Zooming in from his home here on Vachon above Burton is our political conscience, Kevin Jones. Kevin, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you. Truman, I heard some of the headaches and heartaches this morning about getting everything geared up. Thanks for making all that happen.
Sure.
And looking forward to the show today. Glad we could all make it.
Yeah, I am too. Not zooming in from his home, but actually present here in the studio, is the our island historian extraordinaire, Bruce Hallman. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Good to have you here. So. Regrettably, our master of maritime ferry service improvements, Amy Dreyer, is somewhere up in an aluminum tube at about 40,000 feet and won't be joining us either in person or via Zoom this morning. But we do have as our guest, our small talk guest, a celebrated author, former dolphin trainer, and incoming manager of Vachon Island CERT, MJ Witt. How you doing, MJ?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm just recovering a little bit, so if I sound a little breathier than usual, we'll just put it down to excitement.
Yeah, a little croaky this morning. Yeah, just a bit.
Are you manning a 1-800 number or something this morning?
You got to get the money in somehow.
And I am a former creamery worker and ice cream maker, Craig Bellis.
Now, that's a new one. Now, we have not heard that one yet, Craig.
I'm starting to rummage through all my former jobs.
And Craig, beyond our usual standard connection, I just realized that we have a past connection in the dairy industry. So
there you go.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, as we run through our various former jobs, they may cross over in many, many ways. As per usual, let's take a moment to check in with everyone about what special things they may have engaged in or experienced over this past week. Kevin, what's up with you?
Hey, I've been getting boat prep time in. The sunny day yesterday allowed me to get out and spend a good 8 hours with maintenance and washing. And holy smokes, looks like the boat is in good shape for the summer season. So I'm looking forward to that. And, more cruising ahead.
That's great,
Kevin. You're creating a problem for the rest of us whose boats don't look quite so spiffy yet.
You can spend a little bit
down on for a while, so maybe that won't be such an issue. But I expect other people to be rising to the occasion as well.
Well, if you have some extra time, you can always just come to the next boat.
Next boat over.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, they did have the Dave's Dive Service comes out now to the quartermaster and dives on boats because the Islander who decided to retire no longer provides that service. So I was having a good chat with the fellow who was diving on the boat next to mine. And I mentioned, you know, I wouldn't ever ask him to go check my boat because I wasn't signed up, but he was like, I'm happy to.
Good.
I learned my propeller's in great shape, and so that was good to see that underneath is as good as above. So
that's all good news. Things do kind of algae up, don't they?
And barnacle, and yeah.
Particularly in Quartermaster.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was going to say. Bruce, how about you? What were you up to last week?
Well, interesting weekend. We had the Day of Exile ceremony on Sunday, and it was fantastic. I mean, it was predicted to be rain, and it was a glorious day, and just a very touching ceremony. And a large number of islanders showed up for that, including our own Craig Bellis, so we appreciate that. But the most exciting thing was my grandson, Parker, was in the Sportsman's Club Fishing Derby. Thank you, MJ. And he got third place, and he was ecstatic. He caught three trout, and we had trout for dinner. It was spectacular.
I saw the results, and it was a lot of big fish caught Sunday. So.
All right. Yeah, his was, I think his was 19 inches.
Wow.
And
wow.
Like two and three quarter pound. I think the winning fish was like 21 inches and 4 pounds.
4 pounds, yeah.
Sort of like, wow.
That's a big fish.
Get over to that pond.
That's that's a lop over, you know. You can't get in a fry pan.
Yeah.
That's fabulous. That event makes lifelong fisher men and women out of young kids.
It does.
Yeah, it does. Anything else, Bruce? Probably all kinds of things.
All kinds of things. Okay. my wife, Pam, is recovering.
Oh, great.
She had it's new to me. You find out all these things when you get to our age that you never heard of before. She had a ruptured appendix, but it ruptured into what they call an encapsulated abscess.
Hallelujah.
So it just sort of stayed in this little sort of compartment that it created. And she may not even have to have surgery. So she's recovering, you know, sort of.
That's one of those good news, bad news things.
The
bad news is.
But the good news.
Wow.
Oh, my. Truman.
Well, on the medical front, I'm having to take a medication to take care of another medication that I'm taking to take care of another. You know, it's one of those. You know?
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah, it's awful. But I have not worked on my boat because this year I decided I'm going to pay to have it done. And so this Thursday, a crew is going to come out, and it's going to cost me a bloody fortune, but it's worth it that I don't have to do it. So there we go.
Aren't you in the market for a bigger, better, faster boat?
Of course.
Isn't everybody who has a boat?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, it's one-foot-itis, you know. You just want that.
Or two or three. Or
two
four
or three or four. Yeah. You just want that little bit bigger boat, you know. Yeah. I want one with less canvas is what I want.
Right.
Because I hate the canvas stuff.
Yeah, speaking of algae and, you know, moldation.
However, this year I have put a bird... what's the word it'd be? Deterrent.
Or repeller. What'd you put, a snake or an owl or
no,
something?
No, I got
or?
These things that stick up. But anyway, so this year at least I don't have the other problem that you normally have with birds. So, but no, the other thing I did is I have a compost set up at home because I have horses, you know. And
which way is this conversation going?
Well, it's clean. It's clean. It's going to be clean.
Okay.
No, I emptied one of those big compost bins and I poured concrete in the bottom so that I don't end up in China.
You know,
because I keep digging down deeper all the time. Yeah. But the cool thing is it has a signature on it now. One of the horses came up while it was wet and stuck his nose in the
Really?
Guy. Yeah. So I have this cool little nose print over on the the side. Yeah,
Memento.
So. It is.
That's right.
Anyway, that's my day.
You know, if you go straight to the earth, you don't come out in China.
Oh, you don't?
No.
I didn't know that.
No, you don't. Oh. I've tried.
Where do you come out?
Mauritius.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll be darned. No, I did not know that. Thank you.
The
Thank
island you. Of Mauritius. All actually, right. South of the island of Mauritius,
I
but right there in
again.
The Indian Ocean.
There you go.
MJ, how about you? You're recovering from a heck of a trip you took.
Yeah. We just are coming off a 2.5 week, almost 3 week trip to Ireland and Scotland. Toured both countries by motor car, and I got to practice my... my driving skills on the narrow lanes on the wrong side of the road, and no recovery. My wife is taking nerve medication to finally come down after 2 weeks of driving from the back seat. But we had a fabulous trip and toured, and we took both my wife's mother and my mother on the journey as well as my daughter, and it was a fabulous trip. I love both those countries, and it was great to get back. So
sounds tremendous.
Yeah,
just absolutely tremendous.
I have to tell you, I was in Ireland, and I'm sitting in the left seat, and my buddy is driving, and he's an excellent driver, but drives very fast, and driving, you know, down these little narrow roads my wife rolls up a newspaper and is whacking me over the back of the head, saying, "Slow down!" And I just lifted both hands and went, "No hands,
it's not me."
It's kind of fun.
Yeah,
man. Me?
Well, yes.
Is the Day of Exile ceremony, remembering the internment and the bringing of the 30 or so Japanese families to Ober Park that Bruce was talking about earlier. That was a very, very moving ceremony, and I appreciate what everybody did to put that together. And the permanent installment, I guess, that they're working on putting in there, too. Went to CERT radio training at the Center Forest. That was an excellent event. 25 of us or so were there, learning how to use our family, short distance radios, as well as our ham radios. Again, those of us who have ham licenses, who bring them out about once every year, you know, try to remember how to use them. Saw Kimmy and the West Side twang that Truman and Molly just had on the show preceding us, their morning scramble yesterday at the at Camp Covis. Tremendous band. Oh my gosh, they are just wonderful. I went to the Coop and rehearsed for my singing debut that I'll be making there here in a few days for the Dylan gathering that Steve Amston kind of puts on. So wish me luck.
What night is that again?
I don't know.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Will it be recorded?
Hopefully not. Today is a significant day, as are all days. 45 days until the Heritage Museum reopens on July 5th. And
we hope.
That's right.
No, again,
you get down to the
time
last strokes,
and
sort of like, well, yeah, it's all going to come together, but we'll see.
How it might open. You'll open part of a door.
Yeah,
you can peek in the windows.
No. It's going to be spectacular.
I'm sure it will be.
It's the last month, and it's sort of like, oh God, is it all going to be done?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it'll be tremendous. I'm really looking forward to it. And then, of course, we got 59 days until the start of Strawberry Festival, which is on July 19th. And in history today, it's been spoken of earlier today. In 1927, Charles Lindbergh touched down in Paris, completing the world's first solo nonstop flight across the Atlantic Ocean in the Spirit of St. Louis, weighing 5,200 pounds with 450 gallons of fuel when he took off, oftentimes flying no higher than 100 feet off the Atlantic Ocean. And then in 1932, Amelia Earhart took off from Newfoundland and landed in a pasture in Derry, Northern Ireland, as she became the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic Ocean. She was forced to do a very rapid descent of over 3,000 feet because her plane iced up. She was planning on landing in England, but ended up landing in Ireland.
If you've been following Rick Wallace's trek through Normandy,
yeah,
He just walked a day or so ago, walked through the Lindbergh Dunes, which are a set of dunes along the Normandy coast named after Lindbergh, because he apparently flew over those dunes on his
Probably
on
felt his
trip.
Pretty good.
Yeah, it did. Dry land.
Well, they said he was falling asleep for the first several hours because he didn't get any sleep the night before he took off. But he, I'm sure, perked up when he saw the coastline there.
You know that I just looked at it. He was carrying almost 3,000 pounds of fuel.
Yeah.
And I read recently that the airplane was 1,000 pounds over gross
right.
when he took off.
Yep.
And it's amazing he even got off the ground.
You know? Well, I mean, yeah. It's a pretty big plane.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not as big as the plane that Amelia was flying.
No.
That's Orion. I think Orion.
His was the Spirit of St. Louis was Orion.
Oh, it was Orion?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was, they said he was 1,000 pounds over gross. That is amazing.
Yeah. You need a long runway.
Oh, yeah. it was all mud. You know, that was the other bad thing. Right.
Today is a National This, That, and Everything Day. I'll rattle off a few of these. National Waiters and Waitresses Day. This is an important day. I used to tell my daughter, if your date is not nice to the waiter or the waitress, drop them like a rock.
There you go.
And it's Eat More Fruits and Vegetables Day. It's the End of the World Day, which I think occurs every few days. Mm-hmm. It's National Strawberries and Cream Day, and it's Talk Like Yoda Day. Anybody got a phrase for talk like Yoda? No? Okay, that's all right. Now we will get to...
A phrase I do not have.
Yes, there you go. There it is. Perfect. Perfect. Thank you, Truman. I knew that you'd come through.
That was stretching.
That was quick. Yeah. MJ Witt, welcome, and thank you for once again joining us. You've joined us in a couple of your personas in the past.
Always a pleasure to be here.
And it's always a pleasure to have you. And MJ has forewarned us that he is still almost totally recovered, and he has a lingering cough. So if you hear a cough, it's MJ is trying to suppress
yes.
it.
Yes.
Hey, tell us again. A lot of people don't know who you are or how you ended up on Vashon. Tell us briefly about yourself and how you did come to Vashon.
I was thinking about that this morning as I was getting ready for the show, and funnily enough, it's really preparation that brought me to Vashon Island. I grew up in South Dakota and spent a lot of time in Colorado, kind of migrated to Southern California and Silicon Valley for a few years and ended up in technology in San Diego. Met my wife and we got married and lived there for about 15 years. And I'd always been into preparation and being prepared for emergencies and being a prepper, for lack of a common term. And living in San Diego in the glass bubble and you know, looking out 15 feet to your neighbors and into their window, and it, no matter which direction you looked, and where essentially it's a manicured golf course used with other people's water, I just started getting nervous that if anything were to happen in a major emergency, you know, that golf course would turn back in the desert that it was originally pretty quickly. And so I convinced my lifelong third generation San Diegan wife to move elsewhere. And so we started hunting, and she had a long list of requirements in that location, and basically narrowed down my list of places to Oregon or Washington. And so long story short, her brother has lived in Seattle for a while, and he pointed us at Vashon, and it kind of sort of hit all the buttons. It hit sort of my rural living aspect, you know, and getting more back into a living closer to the land, and her being close enough to the urban centers to not go batty and get cabin fever too bad. So we moved in 2017 and fell in love. So,
and we're very happy that you did, by the way.
So. Yeah, 2017. It's not by these standards of the people sitting around you and on Zoom. Is not
very
that
much a newcomer to, to the island, yes.
But you have made your mark.
Yeah, absolutely.
You were the president of the Sportsman's Club for a couple of years just recently.
Yep.
Yeah, and did an excellent job. As a member of the Sportsman's Club myself, I thought your communication skills are fantastic.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's it was definitely a privilege. You know, I had the opportunity to be the 90th president of the Sportsman Club 90th. When I was there. So we're looking forward to the 100th year celebration.
Wow.
They'll probably want you back.
Yeah, probably.
Hey, just recently, you became the incoming manager of the Vashon Island Community Emergency Response Team, commonly referred to as CERT. Before we get into specifics, what generally is CERT?
So, you know, largely, it's right there in the name. Interestingly enough, I look at it as it's community helping community. It's emergency response from your neighbors and your family and the people that you meet in the supermarket and talk to and hold up and clog up the supermarket lanes every day, helping you in times of disaster and emergency. And so the primary mandate is really to provide trained and registered emergency workers on the island. That's primarily the fire department and the sheriff's department, with extra hands, ears, eyes, extra resources in times when their resources are stretched due to the nature of the emergency, whether that be a large-scale emergency or whether that be multiple emergencies that they're having trouble with or a particular large event that they need assistance with. We come in and help them by providing trained volunteers to sort of bridge that gap and spread them a little more versed. So.
Yeah, and it's a great organization. And you, like I said earlier, seem to be kind of uniquely qualified to lead CERT. You have, as you mentioned, a background sort of in, you know, you're self-made prepper, if you will.
Right.
You're very familiar with, you know, what to do in emergency situations. As a matter of fact, you've written several books, have you not, novels about post-apocalyptic Vashon.
Right, yes. I sort of got, growing up in South Dakota, and I tell people this all the time, prepping was just living. I mean, you just dealing with the extreme heats and the extreme colds and the weather and the tornadoes, you just learn to be prepared. Everybody had cellars and canned goods and you know, long-term food storage and just it was just the way people lived. And so coming out of that, I got in when I was in Colorado. I ran volunteer fire and medical rescue for a few years with the department in Northern Colorado. And then I've been a member of the Island CERT team since 2018. Always been a strong advocate for preparedness, as you mentioned. And part of that led me to writing, and I wrote a book about what would happen in a large-scale disaster on Vashon Island. We're in a very unique location here for disasters, and that brings pros and cons with it based on the geography and the situation. And so that book was a great success, and I've wrote four others, and I'm working on the fifth book in the series right now, which will be the final book in the series. So,
well, while we're on that, we can't let it go without you telling us what the name of these books are.
Vashon Island Fall is the name of the book. It's available on Amazon and in the Vashon bookstore.
And I think virtually every one of these was their number one book in terms of that class of?
They've hit number one bestseller on Amazon for that genre for each of the books. So
wow, that is excellent, excellent.
And how about this last one? Now that Truman and I are in it,
yes. It's funny. I was just looking around the room, and literally everybody in this room has been a consultant on one of my books or another. So, including Bruce and both of you, and you two obviously make a cameo role in number four. So, so if you want to hear more about the Treetop Flyers, pick up the book.
Yeah, that's great. And I have to say again before we just move on, the speed that you can write these books, it just I'm in awe of. How many you're working on your fifth?
Right.
When was the first
it
one?
It was 2.5 years ago.
Now you're on your fifth book.
Yep.
Good Lord.
Wow. Yeah, I'm shooting for 3 a year if I can.
Is that dictated and not read? Or is that how you do it?
No, it's just a lot of short nights of up typing and or up early and typing on the
computer. Well, and a lot of research.
Yeah.
A lot
tons of research.
So. Yeah, exactly. Truman, did you have a question?
Yeah, I've been involved with the emergency radio stuff, and I'm sorry I missed the drill. I didn't even know it was on. That's how into things I am these days. But I was also a volunteer fireman years ago when I first lived on the island, and I know that we've now gone to a pretty much professional department with the fire and rescue. And also we have Vachon Be Prepared, which is a great organization. We have FEMA. We have NEROV, which is the neighborhood response stuff. So how does CERT differ from that, or does it differ?
You know, the island's community, or sorry, the island's emergency services break down into largely two groups. One is the professional side, one is the volunteer side. And as you mentioned, on the professional side, we have the fire department, which, although they do have volunteers, I put them in a professional volunteer status just because of the amount of training they have and highly skilled that they have and bring to the table. And then we have the sheriff's deputies that are on rotation around the island. So on the other side of that, we have what we somewhat jokingly refer to as our disaster clubs. And that includes, as you mentioned, Vachon Be Prepared, the EOC Center, Medic Reserve Corps, Auxiliary Communication Service, our radio guys, and a handful of others. And so, and CERT belongs in that second group. And I like to think of CERT as the hands and eyes and ears for the professional side of that emergency services. We do most of our training and all of our activations out there in the field, probably much more so than the other volunteer groups. All of our training is to support the operational aspects of the activity and less about planning and logistics and other aspects. So from that side of it, we're a little different. But each of the disaster club groups fit and meet a special sort of niche in the landscape of emergency services. And that can be from the organization and planning and command that the EOC brings and the medical stuff that the Medical Reserves Corps brings to the table. And we're very, very fortunate on this island to have such a strong both volunteer community and a volunteer community that's very emergency oriented. Probably for a preparedness aspect, I would rate this island probably one of the most prepared in the state and probably in many ways the country. So
I really, just one quick comment. I really appreciate that eyes, ears, and of the emergency group. You're kind of the tactical intelligence group,
right?
The G2 of the. I think that's excellent, and that really clarifies for me the position that you guys hold.
Yeah, because we don't have all the specialized training, obviously, to fight fires or you know, scale down landslides and pull people out and stuff. Right. But we do have lots of trained eyes and ears that we report up to the operations incident commander, and then they can make better decisions about where to apply their very tightened resources that they're under constraint.
But of course, you do teach CPR and that kind of stuff as well, do you not?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We do basic training for medical disaster first aid. We do triage training. Mm-hmm. We do island assessment training so that we can size up buildings and fires and that sort of thing and report them properly. So we do a lot of sort of early first responder type training. Right. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, both Kevin and I are involved with MERT, the Marine side of it. And
absolutely.
It's spectacular how well organized it is.
Yeah.
And just the sort of tactical training you go through, and you never know when it's going to happen or when it's going to be needed. Yep. But it's just very impressive the way the organization functions.
Yeah.
Kevin, did you want to follow up on that a bit or?
I did. MJ, I've got actually a couple of trains of thought. Mm-hmm. I'd like to follow up from, you mentioned the incident commander. So if I'm tracking you, the CERT is the group that convenes when there is some kind of a major earthquake or other issue, right, to be in support of the professionals.
Right.
And you probably meet at the fire department, if I remember right.
Usually it'll depend a little bit on the particular activation instructions, but that's sort of a default location, yeah, there or across the street at the Farsi Training Center.
Got it. Okay, cool. Now, so thanks. I'm fully oriented now. I'm curious about, you said all volunteers. So, and you mentioned there is some training, but do people need prior experience and expertise to get involved, or do you sort of like say, hey, come on, get involved if you're interested?
You know, we absolutely do not require extra training. We love, obviously, to get team members who have some background, either training or skills that sort of dovetail into what we do. But, you know, as an all-volunteer group, we're very open to a wide range of skills and interests and capabilities. You know, I really think that everybody has something to bring to the table. And if we can fit it into, you know, our overall skill set for the team, that's all value add.
Are any particular volunteer skill needs that you're searching
for?
Well,
we always love to see medical skills. That's a primary one. We all do our diligence to not steal from the other disaster clubs. And so often, particularly now with the Medical Reserve Corps being much more active since COVID and in the last half a dozen years, they quite often, and rightly so, get a large portion of those folks who are medical, emergency medical oriented. But if we can get somebody that would love to hang with us, we always enjoy that too. So obviously fire training or fire background. We have some wilderness first responders, wilderness medical folks. Anybody really with operational skills too. We have some ex-military guys, some folks who are in the Air Force still. One of our newest members from the last class this spring is in the Air Force, and he's joined us, and he's been a great new member for us. And folks who have construction experience, you know, everything from shoring up and cribbing things and running machinery, you know, that's not necessarily always in our purview, but if we have that feather in our cap, we have the ability to use it if needed.
You know, so I was involved some time ago now, insert. I don't remember how early on in the process, but I was sitting at a desk at the fire department looking at resource management, essentially. And it was the kind of thing of, okay, here we are. We've had some kind of a disaster which prohibits our ability to get on and off the island. What resources do we have? What buildings are standing? Are the grocery stores up and running? You know, is that where people can go actually get food, or are they somehow down? And we ended up with like a big wall chart that we like grease pencil, if you will. What kind of sort of electronic displays is CERT now moved beyond the wall chart grease pencil stage?
You know, not as far as I would like, being a technology guy. On the plus side of that, you know, technology can be fragile. And so being able to do it the old school way is always a good skill, you know, whether it be map reading or figuring out a flow chart or diagramming on a whiteboard. But that said, there's no reason not to leverage the technology advances that are on the market today. You know, obviously the ACS is probably the most technologically advanced and proficient about staying on that front edge of that curve. The radio guys love the new stuff, and they bring that to the forefold. And we work very closely with them pretty much on all of our activations. And so we gain the benefit of that expertise. As far as what we do day in, day out under an activation or a training aspect, a lot of it is still old school, you know, still tracking and a lot of paperwork. We are in process, as part of my transition, is putting all of our paperwork into a digital format. So we'll have both options. But right now we have a lot of paper forms to fill out, like with any quasi-governmental agency or anything with a governmental aspect to it. There's lots of forms before and during and after that are required. So all that's moving to digital. So we are starting to see some benefits on the technology side with our radios as well. We also have our own sort of fleet of radios that we use, both FRS and ham. And so we're always looking to try to get those into the newer version of the radios that are stronger and longer battery life and all that aspect. But really, at the core of things, a lot of it you would still recognize. So,
Okay. Well, you know, I'm a backpacker and a hiker, and, you know, I bring a paper map and I bring a compass.
Absolutely.
I get on those things that are not going to fail when you
Absolutely.
Need them.
I do. I do, too. You know, and I, well, that's one of the things that my daughter, 16, just turned 16, and one of the first things we taught her, we were living in San Diego at the time, is I taught her how to read a map, and we'd go drive around, and I'd say, okay, get us back home. Mm-hmm. And she'd have to navigate and get us back home. And so that skill is a vanishing one, unfortunately. But
mm-hmm. Okay. Well, maybe one last follow-up here. So you have folks coming in, volunteers. Some have specific training. Some are generalists, like project managers. How does everybody get on the same page? You know, what kind of hands-on training? What does that look like these days?
Right.
For
so a lot of our training comes in directly from FEMA, who sets the national curriculum. Level. And then we do some additional supplemental that is more local specialized. As I mentioned, that includes disaster first aid, triage, basic fire and damage assessment, incident command structure, other skills. One area that's more of the local uniqueness to our group is that island assessment route. We have developed, I think it's six now, island assessment routes that we run. One of the things, as you mentioned, is right after a disaster, one of the biggest deficits is information, and you need good, clear information in order to respond properly. And so one of the things that we can bring to the table for the incident commander is sending our people out in teams to run these assessment routes that basically cover, I would say, probably 80% of the major structures and buildings and locations on the island. And we're always improving on that. And so we run these routes, and then we report that information back up to incident command so that they have a very quick and clear picture within a couple hours on what the whole island really looks like for the majority. You know, Bruce, I know you mentioned the marine folks. We're looking at, you know, I think there's, I forget, and I'm going to pull a number out that's probably wholly inaccurate, but like 33 different little pocket communities that have reduce access other than from the water. And I know you guys have those on a map and everything, and we'd be working closely with you to add that assessment from the waterborne side to filter that information up as well. So, you know, those are the things that we really focus on. We have basically a basic class that is about nine session, including a very general open to the public session that we start with every year. That is our basic class to sort of bring new folks in. And then we have a set of five required core skills that we try to offer throughout training every year or every other year. And then we have a bunch of supplemental trainings that are our standard. But we're always looking to either bring new twists to the standards or bring in new ideas too. We've this spring, one of our very first training in January was about patient transport and the best way that both the aspects of how to transport a patient, but the decisions that you need to make on if you should transport, when you should transport, that sort of thing. So, and that was a new course for us. So
I have a quick question and a comment. I noticed, you were talking about technology and old school. I do a little flight instructing, as you probably mm-hmm. know. And recently on one of my flights, my student had everything on his iPad on the trip. And I said, gee, let me see that iPad for a minute. And I said, oh, darn, your battery just failed. And I threw it in the back seat. I said, now what are you going to do? You know?
Yep.
So I teach the old school stuff, too. I think that's really important.
Yep.
And on that note, now I know you have a MERT. How about a FERT? Or that's kind of close. I mean, so or AVERT or something, aviation. What's the possibilities there?
You know, we do not have anything directly tied in. That airman that I talked about, one of our newer guys, he's also a member of the Civil Air Patrol. Mm-hmm. So we've been just sort of having some water cooler conversations about what that would look like and how to leverage some of that. The other thing from an aerial aspect is I know both the fire department and a couple of our members are drone certified and looking at getting drones and using drones more for a lot of our assessment for difficult locations. So,
right. Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, a quick flight around the island would certainly give you, I mean, you could certainly look for fires at that point. I mean, you know, you could spot them in a hurry. And and we do have the communication capability, obviously, there. So anyway, that's a thought.
Yep.
Okay.
So if I'm interested in getting involved, I mean, what kind of commitment is this? every day, once a week, once a month? I mean, what level of commitment are you looking for?
It's a good question, and it's a little bit of a tricky question. Right now, obviously, with me transitioning as manager from Jan Milligan, Jan's been doing a bang up stellar job for 10 plus years as our certain manager, and so I have some pretty big boots to fill, and I'm rebuilding my leadership team to sort of help me in that transition. And so one of the things we're looking at is we're just coming out of COVID, and so we're sort of jump-starting a lot of our trainings again coming out of that COVID. COVID was a bit of a blessing and a curse for us, for the CERT team in particular. It obviously put a damper, pretty much, you know, cut all of our training for 3 or 4 years. And so we have a lot of folks that are building up their training skills again. So we're looking to jumpstart and really get back into training. But at the same time, we both got to spread our wings in ways that we had never planned on. I would say that probably goes for all the emergency services on the island. COVID was a very unplanned, wide-scale emergency. And so CERT was very active in many ways that we had not ever thought of doing. So
you never thought you'd have to line up cars to get vaccinated.
No, yeah,
I was just going to mention that.
And have to deal with some of the challenges that brings. There's a Navy SEAL quote that I always love when it comes to training is, under pressure, you don't rise to the occasion. You sink to the level of your training.
Oh.
And right now, unfortunately, the level of our training is not where I would like it to be, given our hiatus. And so training is our big focus this year. And with that comes a commitment that I'm going to be trying to draw from our members to attend those trainings more. We certainly have a large number of folks that took the training years ago and have a bit disengaged, or they took the training with the mindset that now that I have the training, I just wait for the big one, and then when the big one happens, I'll show up and go. With emergency training, it just doesn't work like that. Unless you keep your skills sharp, you lose it. And so so we're probably going to be looking at instituting some mandatory level of training hours in a year to keep current. So
that's good.
So if somebody wants to get involved, I mean, what do they do? Who do they contact? And how do they let you know what particular skills they have?
Sure. The best way to do that, there's a couple different routes. One is the VashonBePrepared.org website. At the top, there's a partners pull-down link. CERT's on that pull-down link. You can go there, and all of our contact information is there. You could also email directly to CERT@VashonBePrepared.org. That will get to me, and you can put in the body of the email, I'm interested in becoming a CERT. I'd like to hear when the next basic course comes up, and here's some skills I have. I keep a folder of all those people that contact me, and then when we do the next basic course, and we just finished a basic course this year, and we hadn't done one, I think, in 4 years prior to that. So we had 16 graduates, and all 16 are very eager and avid about being on the team, and we had a really good class, and we're hoping to have another one. I don't know if we'll do one next year or the year after, but at least every other year we're gonna have that intake. So, folks who are interested can just reach out.
Great. So let me follow up then a minute. A number of us are familiar with the NEROs because they're neighborhood groups, and so what's the relationship between the NEROs, which are really neighborhood emergency response, and its neighbors working with neighbors, and CERT? What's that relationship?
It's actually a really good question, and one of the things we've been talking about over a year now is strengthening that tie. Right now, NERO is run primarily through the VashonBePrepared group. Vicky does a wonderful job of both helping NEROs get started and training, then getting them looped in. A lot of the NERO information is also a bit aged. People move and people, you know, age out and that sort of thing. And so one of the first things we want to do both on CERT and on the NERO side is make sure our rosters and all the contact information is accurate. And then what I'd like to do, and this is sort of a personal idea in mind, and I'm maybe talking ahead of myself, but I would really like to get those NEROs tied into our island assessment routes, and so that those NERO captains and NERO leaders can just report into those people running the assessment routes, and then that information all flows back up to where, you know, one of the challenges, I set up a NERO down on the south end when I lived down there in the Wesleyan area, is if it's really an island-wide emergency and I'm a Nero captain, I collect all the information from my neighbors. But how do I get that information to somebody who needs to know it, right? And there's a bit of a disconnect and gap there unless I get on my bicycle or get on my horse and go to the nearest fire station, which is sort of the default venue now. And so looking at ways to strengthen that type of relationship. So
I found it really interesting because of the MERT side of it, the emergency. You're right. I mean, there's 30 different communities, 30-plus communities around, and they all have signs. We're in great shape, or we need help, or whatever. But the problem is communications is by line of sight largely, with VHF radios. So the MERT team is set up where there's basically two boats, one a sailboat with a tall mast, with an antenna on top, 30, 40 feet in the air, and a power boat that can go in close to the shore, and then a smaller runabout that can shuttle back and forth. And so it really takes some organization.
Right.
It lets you think that through. It's sort of like, I may have my boat down at Manzanita, and can tell the community, but I can't communicate with the fire center.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting problem.
Yeah. Yeah, this island has, as I mentioned, it has a lot of very unique challenges, at least unique to most communities. I think you'll probably find similar things on a lot of the islands, but we're big enough to have a large enough population base and a large enough infrastructure base that we have almost a population pressure of needs that are pushing behind it. With 10,000 people on the island, although it doesn't feel like 10,000 people, all of a sudden the ferries are down. They can't get food to us. It's not going to take very long before food runs out and the shelves are bare. And so it behooves us to prepare both ourselves and our community and be prepared to help our community.
Yeah, along those lines. I mean, again, I'm thinking the aviation side of it.
Yeah,
I could see us. We're most likely going to be able to get off the island, no problem.
Yes.
I mean,
that's very true. If you don't have a boat or a plane, you're swimming, stuck. I guess.
Exactly. But it's the old Berlin airlift, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
The Vashon airlift. You never know.
And again, that's something in terms of food supplies. I never even thought about that. But I would think that we need to set something up with, Costco or, cash and carry or somebody to set up a relay.
Yeah, and medical too. I mean, important medications, those aren't stocked very deep. So,
Kevin.
Well, one thing that I heard early on, and MJ, I assume is still true today, regarding, getting on and off the island, the ferry service, I understood at the time, they were told us that if there is a significant earthquake, those ferry boats are not going to be landing at those docks until they are inspected for safety.
Right. Yeah,
so the idea that, they're just going to be, after the earth stops shaking, we're just going to be able to get on and off the island like usual is not accurate.
Yeah, and that's assuming no damage.
How long is it going to take to the docks, right?
Yeah, it's assuming no damage and assuming that those people who crew the ferry boats are able to get to the ferry boats. And as we know, we have problems under normal circumstances for that situation. So how much worse is it going to be if there is some sort of area-wide or regional disaster?
So the idea of looking for those resources and what's available to be able to move people and equipment and food and so on becomes pretty critical. Now, of course, Bruce and I are both moored on a dock that's at the base of a very steep hill. Frank Zellerhoff Sr. Put in the walkway, and he's assured us that it's stout and well built. But it'll be interesting to see, if we can actually get to those boats. Hopefully, we can.
Getting down to them probably is the easy part. Getting back up.
Getting back up.
That's
right.
Always dinghy over from the marina, so there's options.
Well, as we're winding down, and as a pretty longtime CERT member myself, I just have to say it's a wonderful collegial group. People are really supportive of one another, we have a lot of fun in the practicing very serious things, I just want to end it off a little bit on some of the sexy stuff.
Yep. Yeah. Well, let me interject one thing quick, because you mentioned the social aspect, and I wanted to raise that bringing more, again with COVID, everything socially kind of got squashed to a large degree, and we are a very social group, and so. One of the aspects I'm really going to try to bring forth again is some more social time and more social activity. And along those lines, we had a June 8th training that we're going to have to shuttle over into September. But for any of our CERT team listening, we are going to be holding a barbecue at my house and doing a social event on that June 8th window. So
I've been to a few social events at your house, and they're a lot of fun.
We've had a few, yes.
but I you know, I think about the training, the search in the forest, the bringing people out after we've, you know, secured them and put them in a, you know, some sort of carrier. The when and when not to go into a house that may be on fire or that might be subject to an explosion. How to get a car off of somebody trapped underneath it. All sorts of very interesting, you know, how to address serious wounds or broken bones. And the training is extraordinarily valuable. And I think those members on CERT that, you know, engage in those things and share those things become a tight-knit group. How many members of CERT are there now? Do you know approximately?
I know we started in 2005, and we trained well over 400 people so far that have gone through our basic training. I think the sort of off-the-cuff number is almost 80 on the roster. But as I mentioned, that roster is a bit aged. And so one of the things we'll be doing this year, probably midsummer, is sending out a survey and trying to tighten that up and figure out, you know, who's still active, who's still interested, who's willing to come and meet the mandate.
And, you know, just quickly on that roster, do you have skills listed on that roster?
I mean, we do have some, but I would like to get those deeper.
I would think of a matrix, yes. You know, where you could have, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, one of the interesting aspects of a disaster like this, a volunteer organization and volunteer fire departments kind of have the same story, is you're not on call. And so at any particular activation, who shows up and who, with what skill set is always a random roll of the dice. And so you have to figure out, and one of the best, hardest, and most interesting things as a leader is how you take those disparate skill sets and mold them into a unified unit that can operate successfully.
Yeah. Interesting.
Hey, MJ, thank you very, very much for coming today and telling us about CERT and under your leadership, I'm sure CERT's going to continue to be the blossom and become better and better all the time. Any final words or?
I think I'm going to revert back to my prepper roots and say, yeah, the best way that you can help your community is by being prepared to help yourself. That's the first step of any preparedness plan is you need to be able to help yourself and then help your family, help your neighborhood, and then help your community. And so preparing to help yourself, if you don't know how or where to start, reach out and ask. We have a very deep pool of expertise on the island on preparedness. I'm always happy to talk at length about preparedness. So you're free to use that CERT email address to raise questions and just say, I'd like to be prepared and more prepared. How do I start? Where do I even begin? And I can tell you six different ways. So please start small, grow over time, and don't feel a lot of people feel like they need to get to the finish line, and it's so daunting that they don't even start.
Yeah, one step at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Hey, thank you very much.
Sure. Always a pleasure. Thank you much.
We've got just a few minutes left, and we cannot leave the show without sort of addressing or mentioning the fact that the presentation of evidence is over with in the original New York trial, and now the court and counsel are hassling over the instructions that the jury will be receiving in that matter. Any observations or comments from my fellow Brieflies?
I just am amazed that the one witness that the, or actually there were two witnesses, I guess, that the defense team called, but the one completely blew up the court. With the unbelievable.
Tough way for the defense to end.
Oh my gosh.
So, Kevin, you, I'm sure you have a comment.
I'm curious, Craig, what you're, you know, this, they have on some of the news media, they have jury consultants, right, talking about, okay, how did this go over with the jury? I don't know if you have experience about that thing that Truman just mentioned. It kind of sounds like it was a train wreck. Think that's going to have a significant impact on the jury's decision, or think they're just going to go, no, we're just going to follow the judge's guidance, and you know, faux pas in court don't really matter.
No, the faux pas in court matter. They say that the trials are battles of atmospheres. Those kind of impressions of a recalcitrant or a rude witness that the judge, you can see, is just, and this judge is from central casting. He's just the most, you know, likable guy you'd ever want to run across or appear before. That does not go over well, and it will cloud their judgment. It's almost impossible not to. So I think from a defense, purely, you know, objective defense standpoint, that was a mistake. However, they have a client, like I've had many, that they don't care. You know, what they care about is contradicting everything that somebody else says on the stand that they don't like, regardless of how it would play in the overall picture. And that's what Donald J. Trump wants. He wants to object to everything, you know, and wants to have his opinion known on everything without really appreciating trial strategy. So,
yes. Well, I guess maybe I'll close by saying it looks like this country is now, and Bruce can comment on this, of course, is successfully completing its first ever criminal trial of a former president. So that's a milestone. Of course, we don't ever look forward to as a country, but here we are. And I guess I would say that thank goodness we've been able to cross that Rubicon. In this particular case, I think it's certainly well warranted.
Well, it's an important step in the idea that we are a country under the rule of law, that nobody is above the law. That's the importance of this trial.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, for MJ Witt, Kevin, Bruce, Truman, Amy in absentia, and me, Craig Bellis, thank you for joining the Brown Briefly today. Next week, we will return to the Truman Show format, hosted by our very own Truman O'Brien, and engage in short and pointless, short and to the point discussions of select short subjects, which will touch on a myriad of local, national, and international issues. Until then, be sure to carry a pair of shorts and a rain jacket for our ever-changing weather. Thank you.
Indeed. See you all next week.